The committee to order. In the absence of our chair, I will be chairing the meeting today. And we do have one other excused member. Vicki Walker is not with us today also. Senator Ringo should join us shortly. With that, we're going to open up a public hearing in order. We will open this in order of the bills as published on the agenda. So I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 284. And Michael Zisman is going to come up, and we'll let council tell us what the bill does, and then you can more fully explain it for us.
Thank you, Chair Scott, members of the committee.
Thank you. Council, I just got to give a quick summary. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 284 extends the civil statute of limitations on any matter if the attorney representing the claimant passes away before the expiration of the time that would otherwise have been allowed for the commencement of the action.
Thank you. Sorry to leap out of my shoes there. My name is Michael Zisman. I've been a lawyer in Portland for the last 20 years. I currently sit as the chair of the Oregon State Bar's Procedure and Practice Committee.
Thank you.
Our committee is one of, I suppose, the few that maintains strict nonpartisanship and with respect to matters, we're only interested in law improvement and matters of procedure and practice. Our committee is composed of lawyers from all over the state, so we try to maintain geographic balance as well.
I'm here to
address Senate Bill 284. It's an innocuous law improvement bill. The current situation is that if an attorney dies before an action is filed, but after he's already been retained by a potential client, and the statute of limitations then runs out, that claim for which he was retained will then pass away with the lawyer. The problem we're trying to address that problem, and we're doing it in the fashion that we would extend the statute of limitations by 180 days under these circumstances. This would give ample time for someone stepping into the deceased lawyer's shoes to review their files, check for matters that may have a statute of limitations nearly running on them, and then get an action timely filed that would otherwise become time barred. One of the benefits of this bill is it would tend to avoid legal malpractice suits. So in that fashion, it's the kind of measure that will reduce litigation. As far as any analysis I've done of this bill, it is at worst revenue neutral to the state. And again, most importantly, it serves the benefit of citizens of our state who otherwise might be deprived of a valid cause of action due solely to the occurrence of the death of the lawyer who they've hired. Finally, I just say to verify the attorney-client relationship has in fact been entered into. The bill does require that there be a written fee agreement between the lawyer and the client, so there's objective evidence that in fact there was such a relationship. In the absence of that, the status quo would prevail. Thank you, Chair Starr, members of the committee. That's really all, unless I can answer any questions.
Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the only question is 180 days. Why did the committee come up with 180 days as compared to some other time frame? And specifically, it looks like that's based on the that's mini statute of limitations on the death of the attorney. And I'm just wondering, was there a discussion as to the settling of the affairs of the attorney, or is how someone's going to get into the office and actually make these determinations, and making certain that person who had a valid claim that didn't get filed timely is going to be able to be seek through assistance through the courts?
Thank you. Chair Starr, Senator Brzezinski. The 180-day period our committee felt was a reasonable accommodation, particularly with respect to perhaps a sole practitioner with a very busy volume practice who suddenly dies perhaps in the prime of his career, so where that person may have 100 or 2 active files, that, you know, from the date of death, someone needs to be found to come in and actually physically review each one of those files. You know, the period could be longer or shorter. I'm not going to sit and tell you that 180 days is some magical number. It could be slightly shorter, slightly longer.
One follow-up?
Yes.
Can you walk us through as to an experience without giving us names of where this happens? I mean, does the PLF come in and say, we will have an attorney review this attorney's case folders or files and determine what is pending, what needs to be done?
You know, I don't know quite honestly whether the PLF specifically does that as a matter of course. My thinking is that on request, the PLF would, of course, provide that service. But what I envision would be, in the normal course, would be an office share individual or a partner of the deceased lawyer would either take the task upon themselves or perhaps even a family member would do that. And certainly requesting that the PLF do so is, I think, a valid option, just one of probably 2 or 3 possibilities.
Okay. Please. Counsel.
Chair Starr, Senator Przanski, my understanding, just to add to that, about the issue of the PLF coming into an attorney's office who's passed away to review the files, my understanding from conversations I've had with Bill Quitman, who is one of the senior attorneys at the PLF, is that in fact exactly does happen, and that the PLF makes a point of reviewing those files or doling those files out to other attorneys for review purposes.
Okay, I just want something on the record that we have some mechanism for this to actually occur, because I could also see in a solo practice where someone doesn't have some type of association that there needs to be some means of having that take place, and 180 days seems like that's appropriate if you've got the PLF or potentially stepping in.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Beyer.
Thank you. Now, in your testimony, I guess it's in the background of it, if this is talking about civil matters, could you give me an example of what is and isn't covered by this, if this statute was going to affect?
Pretty much, the intent is to cover any civil lawsuit, any tort claim, contract claim, or any other type of civil lawsuit, which I can't imagine one that doesn't involve a statute of limitations. I think every claim has a statute of limitations attached to it. So there's really no substantive area in civil litigation to which this provision would not apply.
Further question? Thank you. What are the statute of limitations on those cases now? I mean, are they varied? Are they all 6 years? I mean, give me an idea of what you're talking about there.
Sure. Senator Starr, Senator Beyer. Statute of limitations range, depending on the type of claim, anywhere from 2 years to 6 years normally. Most tort claims have a 2-year statute of limitations attached to them. Most contract claims have a 6-year statute of limitations attached to them. Various special provisions of law currently in existence can shorten or lengthen those statutes of limitations depending on particular circumstances.
Another question?
Yes, Senator.
Could you tell me why this is coming forward now? I assume we've had statute of limitations for probably since there was a statehood, and I know we've had a lawyer since then, and lawyers have been dying. I mean, what prompted this to come forward? What's the problem you're really trying to fix?
Senator Starr, Senator Beyer, members of the committee, that's a good question. This actually evolved out of the Procedure and Practice Committee 2 years ago. And I tried to reach Carl Kiss, who's the lawyer who actually drafted the language, to find out what the specific reason for this this proposal was. I was unable to reach him, but I have to assume, since so much of what we do and what you do too arises out of real life situations that have occurred, I just have to think that this proposal arose because an attorney died and a claim became time barred, which resulted in a legal malpractice lawsuit, which otherwise would not have been filed. I wish I could answer your question better. Maybe Ms. Graby, who's sitting next to me, perhaps can answer the question better.
Senator Starr, Senator Byatt, Susan Graby for the record with the Oregon State Bar. This did come out of a situation 2 years ago where two attorneys died in Eugene rather suddenly, and they were sole practitioners, and it was difficult. And the POF Professional Liability Fund does come in for the State Bar and go through those files, but there are situations where claims would expire because of the statute of limitations, and so we felt this was necessary to move forward with it.
Senator Byatt. Couldn't the person just go out the and just get another lawyer? I mean, obviously they knew their lawyer died, and if they knew they had a potential claim going forward, don't just go, you know, you got lawyer A, he dies, go get lawyer B. I mean, you know, the phone book's that thick with attorneys.
Chair Starr, Senator Byatt, the problem is this, that the client is a layperson who generally is not in the position to know how long a particular statute of limitations may apply to their claim. The problem we have is that the statute could run the day after the lawyer dies, and the individual citizen would just simply have no basis to know. That's why we're trying to give that citizen a period of time within which to locate a new lawyer.
Senator Ringo.
Thank you very much. Sorry for being late to the discussion. So maybe you already discussed this. This bill references an attorney relationship between the attorney and the client. How does this apply if that relationship is with a law firm?
It applies equally. I mean, the verification mechanism. I know some lawyers have fee agreements that say between Joe Blow lawyer and client. Some firms, I seem to recall my old firm, which is a little bit larger than my current operation, would say that this fee agreement applies as between, you know, XYZ law firm and client. The application of the provision would apply equally. I see the potential issue, which is, well, if you have a relationship with the law firm, it's not that big of a problem. Presumably, well, then the statute would still apply, but presumably there would be a mechanism within a larger law firm that would more likely avoid the problem or result in a shorter time frame that it would take for someone new in the firm to take up the case.
Mr. Chair? I mean, that is what I'm getting at, and I just try to spin the hypotheticals to figure out how it might operate, and certainly in the context of a sole practitioner, to me this makes complete sense. But let's say, for example, you've got Stolreeves with, I don't know, 250 lawyers in Portland and offices all over. You wouldn't want it to apply to all those attorneys. You'd want it to apply to the one or two that are really assigned to handle his client, don't you think?
Yes, but in the event that you have a written fee agreement that establishes the relationship and it happens to be between the firm and the client, you know, there's no necessary protection to the client when their particular lawyer, whoever it happens to be, who's undesignated in the fee agreement, dies.
Yeah.
So,
usually my concern is, and let's just use Stolreeves as an example, I mean, okay, you got the Portland office. Let's say somebody in the Washington, D.C. office dies. Does that, for all of their potential claims, they get another 180 days for every office in the world?
Senator Ringo, as written, yes. The problem that we run is how would we scale it otherwise? In other words,
The
Stolreeves example, we could say 10 days is fair, and we take the solo practitioner and we say 180 days is fair. You know, I think the intent of our committee was to write a fairly streamlined piece of legislation and try to do a one-size-fits-all, and 180 days happened to be the number we came up with. But recognizing that the Stolreeves example, you know, somebody probably is going to get to those files pretty darn quickly.
That's fine. Did follow up, Mr. Chair. I mean, I just threw that out as a hypothetical. I don't know if that's
a problem with the bill. It, to me, it raises a question as to its application, and and I just wonder whether there isn't room to insert something that the lawyer has to be a person responsible for handling a client. I mean, it raises more subjective considerations, but at least you try to create. It would be a little more narrowly tailored to address that. And I'm just tossing that out as an idea. So,
you know, Chair Starr, Senator Ringo, I'm just sitting here. It probably helps if I actually look at the language before answering the question. And now that I'm doing that, it seems quite plain to me that, in fact, the written fee agreement must designate the attorney. If you look at subsections 1 and 2 of Section 2 of the bill, it indicates that the attorney has agreed to represent the person, and secondly, that the attorney-client relationship between the person and the attorney is confirmed in writing. So, having actually read what we've written, I think we can. The bill does satisfy your concern.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair. So let's say there was an agreement with Stoll Reeves, who was representing a party, and that agreement was with Stoll Reeves, the law firm, and a lawyer dies. Even if it's a lawyer who's handling the file, because a fee agreement was with a law firm, they're not going to get a 180-day tolling of the limitations, because the agreement didn't specifically represent an attorney.
That would be correct, and I think, Chair Starr and Senator Ringo, it is highly probable that if this measure becomes law, that the PLF bulletin will specifically tell all the lawyers that your fee agreements need to designate a specific attorney in order to obtain the benefit of this tolling provision.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
Further questions? Hearing none, thank you. We're going to close the hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 284.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prozanski.
I move SB 284 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Prozanski has moved Senate Bill 284 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, if you're asking for discussion on this, I favor the bill. To me, it's a common sense approach to solving a rare problem, but something that we ought to address.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I think the one thing that did come up during the conversations is the ability for someone to be able to actually go out and seek other legal advice. Clearly, if they have knowledge of the person dying, they may be able to do that. I think that one of the concerns here is that unless someone reads their obituaries on a daily basis, they may not even know the attorney's dead until some time has passed. And so based on that, I think it's reasonable to allow the PLF to come in and basically try to undo what would be a possible claim against the estate. I mean, I don't know how you'd move against it, but I mean, the reality is it seems like people who may have some wrongdoing done to them would be left at the doorstep because the person they chose to represent them had a mishap and is no longer able to represent them because they're not around.
Anything further? Senator Beyer.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I don't think a real pressing need has been demonstrated, in my opinion. As I said, we've had lawyers and we've had the state and we've had people dying for 150-plus years. I just can't see a compelling case to do this at this point in time. It just, it isn't like there's some big epidemic that I've been presented. It seems to me that if a lawyer dies 179 days away from, statute of limitations running out, should the new lawyer get an extra day if the lawyer dies, one day away from it? It's just, I don't know. In my opinion, the case hasn't been made, so I won't be supporting the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Well, just a comment. I mean, the reality is I'll have clients come in to me and say 60 days before the limitation period runs, and I'll figure out the facts of the case, and 60 days is a pretty short time in the scheme of things, and it'll make me concerned. I think, okay, I'm going to have to address this immediately, and it probably means file a lawsuit immediately. And I'll probably tell the client I'm going to do that, and I'll say, okay, I'll get going on this, and you'll hear from me in a month or two, because don't call me every day. I don't have anything to tell you every day. So just let me get back to you when I need to talk to you. And that's how I usually do things, and let's say that I kick the bucket the day after that. That client wouldn't know, unless, like Senator Prezanicki says, they read the obituaries. And so I just think it's to cover that eventuality. Food for thought.
We've got a motion to move the bill. Let have the clerk call the roll.
Senator Beyer?
No.
Senator Prezanski?
Aye.
Senator Ringo?
Aye.
Senator Whitsett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr?
Aye.
Four ayes, one a, not nay. Sorry.
Senate Bill 284 has moved the floor with the due pass recommendation. Senator Ringo, would you carry that?
I'd be glad to, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Open the public hearing
on Senate Bill 370.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 370 preserves the attorney-client privilege for specific communications made to the Office of Public Defense Services when those communications are made for the purpose of making a complaint against an attorney who is providing public defense services.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Ingrid Swenson, I'm with the Office of Public Defense Services, and I'm testifying today on behalf of the Public Defense Services Commission, who is requesting this bill and Senate Bill 371 today. Last session in House Bill 2074, the legislature directed the Public Defense Services Commission, a fairly new agency, to adopt a complaint policy which would permit district attorneys, defense lawyers, members of the public to file complaints about the way public defense funds are used by attorneys. The Public Defense Services Commission did adopt such a policy in October of last year, and I've attached a copy as an exhibit to my testimony, which I haven't given yet. The policy which they adopted addresses the issue directed, they were directed to address by the legislature, which is the use of funds. It also addresses the quality of representation so that members of the public, clients, defense lawyers, and others can bring to the attention of the commission complaints about the quality of representation provided by public defense lawyers. We receive complaints from all of these sources, and sometimes in the effort to investigate the complaints, it is necessary for us to talk to clients of public defense lawyers, to judges, to prosecutors, and to defense lawyers themselves. One of the issues which arises when we are investigating such complaints is the impact on the attorney-client privilege when either the client or the attorney needs to disclose to us, in order to make a complaint or respond to a complaint, information that would otherwise be privileged. And it is certainly our desire to work with as much information as we possibly can so that we can do an appropriate job of investigating and resolving complaints. For that reason, we are asking you to consider this piece of legislation, which would basically provide that in the course of a complaint process, either the filing of a complaint or responding to a complaint, that if it's necessary for either the client or the attorney to disclose to us information that would otherwise be privileged, the privilege is not lost by virtue of that disclosure. Now, that was our intention, to create a very narrow exception. it has been brought to our attention that our bill accomplishes more than we wanted it to. It needs to be narrowed, and I'll tell you where that appears. In Senate Bill 370, on the second page, if you look at the bottom where the bold language is, subsection 5, it says, notwithstanding subsection 4 of this section, and then goes on to preserve the privilege. That should say, notwithstanding subsection 4C of this section. The impact of the language as drafted would be to preserve the privilege in circumstances we did not intend to preserve it in. For example, with respect to communications that may involve crime or fraud. Consequently, if the C is inserted, it would narrow it to the situation which we intended to cover, which basically says that there is no privilege if the communication is relevant to a breach of duty by the lawyer. So that's the only piece we want to change, and if we add the subsection C to that, it would have that effect. For that reason, we are not asking you to move this bill out today. We have council has requested an amendment, which should be ready shortly, and we would ask you to consider passage of this measure when the amendment arrives.
Questions? Seems very straightforward. We will await. We will be carrying this bill over. We'll carry it over until Monday, reset it for the Monday agenda. With that, I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 370 and opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 371.
Chair Starr and members of the committee, again, Ingrid Swenson testifying on behalf of the Public Defense Services Commission this afternoon. Senate Bill 371 is similar to Senate Bill 370 in that, again, we are seeking a very narrow exemption from the disclosure rules which permit a privileged communication, attorney-client communication, to lose that privilege under certain circumstances. So what we are asking the legislature to do in this instance is with respect to non-routine expenses. In cases, criminal cases, juvenile cases, civil commitment cases, it is often necessary for a lawyer to employ the services of other professionals to assist in the presentation, preparation, investigation of a case. For example, if a lawyer has a good reason to doubt whether his client is mentally competent to proceed, it would be necessary to seek the services of a psychologist, for example, to examine that client and determine whether or not the client has the capacity to understand the nature of the proceedings and to go forward. When those cases are public defense cases, the attorney seeking those additional professional services is required to submit a request for the cost of those services to the Public Defense Services Commission. The Public Defense Services Commission is authorized by the legislature to approve those requests when they are necessary and reasonable for the defense of the case. So it is our obligation to examine those requests very carefully and thoroughly in order to make that determination. Is this, in fact, justified in the circumstances of this case? Once again, as with our complaint process, we find that it is necessary when we're talking with attorneys about these requests to inquire into specifics of the case. We can't determine whether the service is necessary unless we have some pretty small details about the case and the evidence in the case and the information that the attorney has about the case. Some of the information which an attorney needs to provide to us in order to respond to those inquiries is privileged information. And once again, here we're seeking a narrow exception to the provision which says if you disclose privileged information, the privilege is lost. We don't want that to happen as a consequence of a lawyer doing what we need them to do, which is to provide very detailed information so that we can make a good decision about their request. For that reason, we are asking that you approve Senate Bill 371. And in this case, I think the bill was drafted as narrowly as it could be and doesn't reach to any other kinds of communications other than the ones that we're seeking to protect.
Questions? Leave you've answered them already.
Thank you.
We will close the public hearing, open a work session on Senate Bill 371.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 371 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Prozanski has moved Senate Bill 371 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Any opposition? Seeing none. So ordered. We have a volunteer to carry.
I'll carry it.
Senator Prozanski will carry Senate Bill 371. Any announcements?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I have a handout from Senator Burdick regarding this Thursday's trip to view the oral arguments on the Court of Appeals about what time we should be there and where we can leave from, if you would like to join staff in walking over. I'll pass that out now.
Thank you. Anything else? No further business. We declare the Senate Judiciary Committee adjourned for this day.